Diamonds in the dust, that is all we are. Some of us give up, some dream of the stars. There's a change in the wind that's blowing, and I feel God's blood in my heart. And though we might not know where we're going, I promise we'll never be apart.
Welcome to the Hearts of LNP, brought to you by Late Night Poets at allpoetry.com. The group hosts shows every night of the week on a variety of topics to ensure that there is something for everyone to enjoy. And if you want to support our shows, we have anthologies available on Amazon, which boasts a wonderful selection of poetry offered up by the poets of our group. And speaking of our poets, with the gracious permission of several of our members, I have brought to a reading list tonight for your listening pleasure. I encourage you to do come in, find a comfortable seat, and make yourself at home. I am happily your host, Victoria Frost. Today, I started off with an idea of looking at the mundanity of life, those moments when nothing overtly exciting happens, and yet there's something about those moments. The known, it's the comfortable, it's the things that we expect to be secure day by day by day, and we don't expect them to change, and yet they do in their own little ways, their own little nuances. They change and they adjust. And with that, it made me think of the pride and joy that comes in those moments when you do something good. And so tonight, we are going to be featuring a mix of life as we live it, life as we know it, the simple, the mundane, and yet also the peace, perhaps, that brings you the most pride. So it'll be a little eclectic, but I'm really, really excited about it. And I have Pam, who's our technology wizard, who is helping me with the phone. How are you doing tonight, Pam?
I'm doing great, but you should know that technology wizard is definitely not a name you should give me because I am simply someone who, this like a technology wizard is someone like my friend Trixie. She's really good at, you know, she's one of those people that if something happens that goes wrong with the computer, she knows what to do. I follow instructions. If there were ever anything to happen with the studio that had never happened before, I would not be your person to fix it. I'd be the person going, oh, shit, the show is over.
Well, so all of that's a very fair, understandable statement. But I offer up to you a thought. The Wizard of Oz was just a man behind a curtain pulling fancy wires. And is that not what you are doing for me, Pam?
Well, there you go. I am the woman behind the curtain.
You are LNP's version of the Wizard of Oz. Oh, well, by chance, do we have any guests that have decided to join us tonight?
Yes, absolutely. Welcome, Afaziana. Glad you could join us.
Thank you.
Hey, Dave. Welcome to the show. I'm so glad you're here.
Me too.
Well, I'm going to, Faze, do you mind if I put you on the spot and have you start us off with your piece, or would you like to have that read later on?
I'm rethinking what I'm going to read, so put me later, because I want to match your theme, and I'm trying to find something.
I don't know. It's kind of an eclectic theme. Is there such a thing that can match it? Well, whatever you bring, I know it's going to be stunning, because you always have such beautiful work. So with that in mind, I'm going to start us off with your new co-host, Babbler, Wash, Rinse, Reheat. And it's actually, this was the poem that I was, that kind of started the whole thought of this show. I wanted to make sure that she was on this show just because she's our newest host. And I want people who listen in, who maybe don't know her, get a moment to stop and look and see kind of what the show hosts bring. And Faze does such a great job of calling in, for those that don't know, Faze does such a great job of calling into those shows and supporting them. So we get really, really lucky because she's here with her bubbly, wonderful personality of herself. And, of course, Pam is here with her shows. And so Babbler being new, I wanted to make sure that people kind of got a sense of her writing style and some of the things that she writes about. And then hopefully, you know, maybe let some people find someone they'd like to listen to on the show, maybe. But I'm so glad Babbler's joined. Long story short, so glad she's joined. I saw this piece and it sparked kind of the thought of this show. So we'll start off with this one. This is Wash, Rinse, Reheat. I roll out of bed Monday through Friday at 7 a.m., rearrange my hair, brush my teeth, t-shirts, jeans, sneakers, coffee, door. Good morning, Bob. Such a lovely day. Open laptop. Type, meeting, type, signatures, lunch, the sandwich. How was lunch, Bob? What did you have? Sounds delicious. Open laptop, type, bathroom, type, signatures. So goes my so-called life. Have a good day, Bob. Don't work too hard. After dinner, from the lazy Susan of recipes, I reach into the freezer, pull out a pint of vanilla and wonder if maybe somewhere in the back, under all the freezer burn, there's a human heart. End of poem. And Pam, would you mind starting us off with comments?
Absolutely.
Are you on mute?
Yeah, and this was a good write to hear again. It's, Well, shoot, I just can't think of anything new to say. I don't know what to say. It's just been too soon. But I do enjoy this,
no,
right?
No,
I
no
like
way.
It. And very well done.
No worries. And that is my faux pas, because I did not realize that it had been read up recently on a show. So I appreciate you bringing that. And it's a great reminder to listening to our other shows, because we like to hit on a variety of stuff. And so I appreciate that, Pam. Thank you. And Faze, did you get a comment on this originally, or would you like to?
I did originally, but I'll repeat myself. That's okay. I love how short some of her lines are. Like, door. The fact that door is its own line just really strikes me as, like, that's an important step. Get out the door. It emphasizes, like, how big of a deal door is. Like, each step of this is like, yes, it's just routine, but it's like an important step of the routine. So I don't know, that struck me, and the way that she has it spaced out makes it stronger. I like that there's the conversational tone that's in between the stanzas, and the end is quite the shock with the human heart. And I've looked at it two ways. So originally I thought she was kind of like a monster or like an evil villain or something that has this human heart. But then it came in the conversation last time, it kind of brought me to thinking that it's actually about finding her own heart. It's like maybe underneath all of this and the coldness that comes with that kind of mundane routine, there is a heart within her that's just buried. And that adds a whole other layer of depth to it. So I really enjoyed it.
That was a beautiful comment, Faze. Thank you for that. And I would agree that, much like you kind of said, I took this more along that second line. When we're younger, we have this idea of passion and fire. We know what we want to be. We know what we want to do. And yet, whether you end up doing what you wanted to do your whole life or you end up on another career, there's kind of that loss of self in it, that loss of passion that fizzles out. I mean, with my career, I absolutely love what I do, but, you know, by tax day, you know, tomorrow, I'm burnt out. Do I want to see another tax return? No, I don't. Do I want to talk about taxes? No, I don't. Do I want to go on a vacation? Yes, I do. And so to me, that's really kind of spoke of how life just kind of drones on. And in those silent moments, at the end of the day, when we reflect on our life, that it was basically the same shit, different day, we're kind of forced to wonder what happened to the dreamer, to the person who had so much fire and so much passion, and wonder if it's just been buried deep in a freezer. Maybe it can be thawed out. Maybe the frozen nature of the environment has just made it fizzle out and it needs to be thrown away. To me, it was just kind of really striking on the way that our lives can have such similar aspects day to day, and yet can hold such a great loss when we take a moment to stop and ruminate upon it. So it was a fantastic piece by Babbler, and people definitely should check her out. All right, up next, we have Give and Take by Vamp the Vixen. And Faze, would you mind reading this one for us?
Sure. Give and Take by Vamp the Vixen. My phone rings in the dark, noisy moonlit heartbreak, moonlit breaking of her heart, rain seeking my shoulders. Whispers of sadness in depths of her blackest night. The depths of her blackest night wake me from slumber. Apologies for my lost sleep, her voice trembling truth. Her voice trembles, unable to sleep, till truth discovered. But when tables turn, she'll help me find my own daylight. For daylight found returns each dark night of our souls. End poem.
Oh, this is such a fun and stunning poem to read. Nobody really ever enjoys a phone call in the dark. Usually by the time that we're sitting in a dark room, we should theoretically be sleeping. And so to have this sudden strike or sudden jolt of the phone ringing in the dark, I can just imagine the screen lighting up a room that's black, noisy moonlight, heartbreak. And to me, that really reminds us that sometimes we can get those calls, that the jolt doesn't come just from the suddenness of the noise, but sometimes it's the fear that comes with it, the idea of something bad that has happened, because who in their right mind would be calling at such an hour? And so those whispers of sadness leach into the blackest night, waking them from their slumber. Their voice captured as lost to sleep, trembling because these calls don't have something positive usually to them. But in this instance, after all the buildup of that fear, of the anxiety, of the concern that comes with such a call at such a time, it turns out that the tables have turned and that there's something beautiful in this phone call. Perhaps it was someone had a nightmare and they called because they just wanted to hear your voice, or perhaps they were just thinking of you, or perhaps it's a drunken phone call and somebody went out and, you know, had one too many, and you were what's on your mind. And so I appreciate the buildup of this poem that then leads into something that's so light and airy and almost comforting. It was just delightful for such a brevity. It was just delightful. And Pam, what did you think?
Well, first of all, that was a wonderful comment. I have to agree, this is just beautiful. It's written with lovely couplets. I like that. I like that it's a tribute to friendship, but the kind of friendship where it's not, you know, 100%, but on both sides every time. But sometimes the one person needs the other person's strength, and then it's returned. They need that somebody that they can turn to when life or situations or even just depression pulls you down and weighs heavy on you. And so I really like that there's that sense of an equality in this friendship, that no person is completely just taking and not giving. And it's always important to have those type of friends that you can call, and you know that even if they don't answer the phone right away, they'll get back to you, and you'll have somebody to talk to, and you'll have somebody to cry to. And in those joyful times, you'll have somebody to laugh with. I just think this is a wonderful write and very well done.
That was such a beautiful comment, Pam. And I love that you really emphasize that in this relationship, there is that give and take, because so often we hear about the toxic relationships, and typically it's because someone continues to take and give so little. And so, you know, getting to hear about a piece that does have that give and take, where they both rely upon each other, where they take turns being each other's strength, it is a really beautiful thing to read. So thank you for that. And Faith, what did you think?
Well, I completely agree with what you've both been saying. I'd also like to say that I love the format of it, where it's like the way that it ends on the first line, it goes into the next line kind of starting with that, like moonlit heartbreak, moonlight breaking. And then for like the next one, it's the depths of her blackest night, and then it's the depths of her blackest night. So it's like the second line of each couplet starts off how the first one ended, but then kind of it's like a role reversal. I don't know how to describe it, but there's something really interesting about the way that it was formatted. And then it says at in the AN, the form is marble run poetry. So I'm going to have to look into that, because I really liked the way that it flowed. And maybe that's what a marble poem poem is the way that it was arranged. So it repeats sort of a little bit, but it changes it around. I found that really interesting as a format.
Oh, and I'm so glad you brought that up, because that is, I think it's always really fun to see how people can reuse words that they've written in their poems. So often we get stuck on the idea that as we write, we have to come up with these new lines. But there's forms that reuse lines. You know, Vianella's end up reusing lines 1 and 3 in specific locations. And I think that there's just as much beauty in the ability to rephrase something that you've written so that it continues the poem is a beautiful thing. And I think that she did it so well in this, because to be honest, I didn't initially catch that. And so I'm thankful that you brought that up, because it does show not only someone who's looked at their craft and tinkered with it so that you have this beautiful piece of art, but as you continue to read, you get to rediscover. So I appreciate that, Paige. Thank you for that. And up next, we have Remembering by Cox. And Pam, if you'd be so kind as to read this one for us, if I can find the group in just a moment.
I would be happy to. All right. I do apologize. Well, let me take a sip of my tea. I'm unprofessional, but all right. This is Remembering by Cop. It goes like this. I drift away to shadows, to memories unwinding, into muddy mirrors, words or eyes floating in syllables of warning, where breathing is a slow metaphor and poem.
Beautiful read, Pam, and fantastic write by Cop. I think what really struck me about this, and he kind of says in his author's note, but thoughts about memories and how slippery they become until they end up in the muddied mirrors of living. It reminds me, and I think I've mentioned this on one of the shows before, but it reminds me of my dad. My grandmother passed away when my dad was 18. Completely unexpected, fifth person in the United States to die of heart cancer of all things. And because of that, it kind of directed his life. But as he got older, as he had kids, and as, you know, we would ask about our grandma, one thing he always mentioned was that he's starting to forget what she sounded like. He's starting to forget how she smelled. He's starting to forget what she looked like. And to me, that's so striking, because we sit and we say, you know, these people, they mean so much to us. I'll never forget them. But our memories slip away from us. They get muddied. The clarity of them kind of shifts and decays as life goes on. And in such a beautiful, simple way, he's really kind of captured that. I drift away to shadows, to memories unwinding into muddied mirrors. This idea of like a vignette coming onto a picture, onto a memory, so that bit by bit, those outside details, those background details decay, that the memories slowly unwind and you forget the most subtle details, and the mirror becomes muddy because it's no longer quite so clear. I'm sitting here with goosebumps, because it's so striking and it's so beautifully timed. And he won a gold in poetry briefs for this, and it is definitely well deserved. Just a fantastic piece. And Faith, what did you think?
Well, I love what you said. I think that that's, you know, something to definitely consider, is that pain of starting to forget, and that fear of losing that last bit that you have of the person, because your memory is all that you have left. And that, you know, this is captured within his poem. I really liked the muddied mirrors as a concept, and that's a great line. And for words being eyes floating, that's really interesting. That like the words are the way that he sees. Maybe he's reading her words. Maybe he's reading what he had written about her before. But something about like words becoming the eyes is a really intriguing notion. And breathing becoming a metaphor. I think this is so much within such a short poem. It's incredible.
That was such a beautiful comment, Hayes. And I do agree. He really did not waste any lines. The way that he captured a thought in each line is so incredibly powerful. It's truly what makes this just a masterpiece. So thank you for that. And Pam, what did you think getting to read it?
I thought this was beautiful and powerful. And yeah, when you go and write for a contest, like this was written for a contest where you had to write a microbrevity in 25 words, you really can't waste any words. He takes 25 words and pours his heart into it and puts such wonderful intellect into it. I like it all the way through, but I drift away to shadows. You know, the drifting away to shadows is such a wonderful metaphor and imagery to the idea of trying to grasp for that person, for their, like you mentioned, their voice, or even their little idiosyncrasies, little things that they used to do that you so badly want to remember. I like floating in syllables of mourning, where breathing is a slow metaphor. You know, I think relate at night and first thing in the morning is often when memories hit you the hardest. And you're laying there with the only thing that's keeping you company is your breath, and you just feel at that moment that that's not enough. So just an excellent write and very well done.
Oh, I love what you said there, Pam, that those memories do hit us the hardest when we are going to sleep, those quiet hours of the day when we have to sit and reflect upon everything that's happened, or even those waking moments. Particularly in what you said reminds me of waking up after a day where you receive bad news. You want to wake up. You want it to be a do-over. You don't want to believe that what's happened has happened. And so it has its own kind of impact in those moments when you have to realize that this is life now. This is that it's happened, and this is the world that we now live in. So that was just a really beautiful comment, Pam. Thank you. And up next, we're going to read Vampiric Love by Poetic Picasso. My veins are infused by vampiric blood, a drug consuming me with its substance, like the acid burning on my fiery tongue. The intoxication of its love is enrapturing. I bathe in the pool of the scarlet flood, perfumed by a strong, inescapable scent, as her vestal aura evokes a sudden craving, quickening my taste of her carnal flesh. Her beauty is like the delicacy of a red rose, so natural and so pure in its real essence, of her soft ruby lips and her sweet kisses drown me within the passion of this love. I roam the sea and land like a madman in search of the lover of my seduction who had once breathed life into my veins in that midnight in the streets of Madrid. Her love is like a row of deadly thorns, piercing my porcelain heart into shards, infecting me with the poison of her love, but I can't resist imbibing from this elixir. Thus, this vampiric love will destroy me. If the sun rise does not burn me into ashes and I continue to be the wretched beast to to the erotic desires of this exotic love. I have 1,000 lovers to adore me, sensual pleasures to entertain my whims, but no one excites me like my vampirist, whose love is the ambrosia of immortality. I am a slave to the obsession of this love, and no other woman could possess me like the seductive mistress of darkness, and I will go insane without a taste of her lips. End poem. And Faith, would you start us off on comments?
I really liked this. It had that sensual vampire fun to it, where it's not actually about like literal vampires, but it has that kind of eternal connection that I think is what makes vampires appealing often in fiction, because there's like that connection that is forever, especially with the one who turns you into a vampire. I really liked the line, "Who had once breathed life into my veins." Because, you know, people do that when you really love them. It's like they make you come alive, and to lose that person who does that for you makes you have to like search for that forever, and to roam the sea and land like a madman looking for that feeling again, for that person who made him feel that way, where nothing else is enough. You know, he says that, you know, he has women, he has fun, but it's not the same. He needs this particular love, and go insane without the taste of her lips. I thought that was magnificent.
Beautiful comment, Faith. Truly beautiful. And I appreciate what you say, because you're right, it isn't necessarily about vampires, but it definitely does evoke that kind of idea of someone that you're just, who's consumed you, who's wormed their way inside of you, and that you can't really escape. And in so many ways, you could argue that a vampire is like that. They latch on and they suck a piece out of you, be it good or bad. They change and impact your life, and it's something that sticks with you. So that was just a phenomenal comment. Thank you. And Pam, what did you think?
I think this is a wonderful tale. Dark and seductive. It reminds me of my daughter, my 12-year-old daughter. She introduced me to this YouTube channel, which I can't remember the name of, but the young lady who does the channel, she's an illustrator, but her channel covers a lot of mythology or classic books. Like we watched together, we watched her talk about the epic poem Beowulf, and which she does in such, she talks about these things in such a fun way to make them interesting. And then she talked about Dracula and the metamorphosis of vampires based on what people socially want from vampires. How they went from being the Nostradamus, the monster type vampire, where they're completely evil, to starting with Bram Stoker's Dracula, the idea of the vampire that has more of a human side, more of a sensual side. And I think that type of vampire is what Frank captured here. And I do like the duality of this piece, how it does work beautifully as a wonderfully entertaining tale of bloodlust, but it also does work well as a metaphor for just being crazy in love and feeling like you can't live without that person. So excellent write and very well done.
That was such a phenomenal comment, Pam. And I love that you brought in the mythology of the other vampire lords, because if you do look back at the lords, the initial ones were not pleasant. Like you said, Nosferatu was this very, special creature. It was not anything that we would have wanted to romanticize. It's something that was to be feared. It was a monster in its entirety. In Greek mythology, Lamia was the first vampire, a lover of Zeus cursed by Hera. And she was forced to roam eating babies. I mean, who wants to be around something that eats babies? And so typically you do have these ideas of vampires as these monstrous creatures. And yet, like you said with Dracula, there does become that human, almost sensual side to it, which if you think about it, could be even more terrifying than this creature that you want to run and hide from, because, you know, it's easy to know that you want to run away from something that just looks evil. But when it's seductive and it wants to draw you in and it disarms you, and you might even like it, you might go willingly, or at least think that you are going willingly, that's when the true horror kind of begins. So along with that humanity also comes something that can mimic us, can make us desire it. And so we go into a state that we might not have otherwise picked. So that was just a really awesome comment, Pam. I quite personally enjoyed this piece because, much like both you, Pam, and Faith have said, it really does kind of draw you into it. It tells this tale almost as if there is this seductor. It almost reminds me of Lestat from the Vampire Chronicles. Someone who, if you look at Queen of the Damned in the movie sense, someone who had girls willing to come, someone who has those lovers, they don't need to hunt. People come willingly into their embrace. And yet, the thing that takes away from their life, from this creature's life, is not a monster, but the idea of a lover once met in Madrid who was able to shatter their heart, weave their vines around it, and encase it in a way that not only does it pierce the heart and allow that poison and passion and love to seep in, but also in a way protects it, guards it, creates a shield that others can't quite get past. Very much like that idea of a double-edged sword piercing in, keeping others at bay. And so it is quite enjoyable to think of a love in which, you know, time has gone on, life has forced people to move on, and even if they have all the wants that they could have, there's still that piece that misses, that part of them that others don't quite seem to ever touch because it's been so guarded, it's been infested. And in many ways, it's like that vampiric leech that keeps everything else just not as vibrant because of their presence once upon a time. Just a really stunning, beautifully sensual piece that I feel almost speaks like velvet and yet leaves us wanting for more. A fantastic write. So thank you, Frank. Couldn't call in, but I'm always so thankful when he provides a piece for the show. And I believe I saw Rex hiding around. Is Rex perhaps with us, Pam?
He wasn't last time I checked, but let me check again. Nope, he's just listening in the shadows. And
Rex. Well, he's in the shadows for now, but perhaps we can coax him out. That's my hope. So, and Faith, it looks like you've settled on a poem. Yes.
Yeah. If you want my mundane life, that's it.
I will. You know what? I'm going to take your mundane life, but I'm also going to keep the other poem, just because I might need to hear both. So we'll start with your mundane life.
All right. Librarian by Faziana. Librarians provide more than a book. The library is bountiful if you only look. Offering information, analysis, and advice computer troubleshooting without a price. Nurturing curious souls from infancy, guiding teens outcast for delinquency, sympathetic ears to seniors lost to senility, showing everyone growth is a possibility. Championing literacy and mental stimulation, everyone equal, no discrimination. Singing, sign language, research, first aid, managing books isn't why we get paid. And poem.
Oh my gosh. You say that this is your mundane life, but I want to be a librarian now. So sounds a lot more fun than what I do. Honestly, I'm kind of sitting here in awe. Because, and it's probably, don't get mad at me because I haven't visited a library in a long time, but I don't think that people quite understand what librarians are and what they do. You know, history and, well, not necessarily history, but movies tend to portray librarians as, you know, the little old lady who's sitting at a desk just shushing people. Like, that's all they're doing. And yet, here's all these joys, the bounty of the books, the advice and analysis of information. I can't believe you guys would troubleshoot computers. Maybe you're our technology wizard.
Oh, I feel like that's
wizard.
All I Cam? Do anymore.
Cam, keep chasing your back
so
pocket.
Oh my god. Oh, for some, like, I don't know, places seem to like refer people to us if they can't, like, don't know how to use their phone or something. And I mean, like, I'll help with pretty much anything, but it's overwhelming right now because, like, everything's online. So there's all the, these little ladies who are so sweet, but they have no idea how to use a computer. And they're like, I need to do my census. And so you have to, like, show
oh
them how to, like, get to the computer and how to use a mouse and how to, like, go, oh my God, it's like, not what you would expect that I'm doing. Yeah.
So you'll appreciate this. You'll appreciate this. I got an iPhone. I haven't had an iPod. My last iPod was in like 2004, you know, when it still had that really cool little dial that you just like run your finger around on and then you press the little center button as you're enter, you know, no touch screens or anything. So that was the last Apple product that I've used. I've been an Android user of phones, you know, not a what's better argument, you know, just to me, they're both just different OSs. Anyways, I got an iPhone first time a few weeks ago. I totally lasted 4 days because I'm sitting here and I was like, I don't know how to open my email. I don't know how to do this. And so I kept getting called a boomer because I was so frustrated. I was like, this is so not funny. This is so frustrating. So next time I'll just call you FaZe and just have you walk me through it.
Yeah. We have a tech helpline that was supposed to be, like, because we have ebooks and audiobooks and stuff like that. So it was supposed to be specifically library tech help. Like, my ebook's not downloading and I can troubleshoot them with that. But everyone calls
yeah.
for things that have nothing to do with the library. I'm like, I'm not actually a computer expert, but turn it off and turn it on again.
Oh my gosh. Well, you probably know more than me. I am not very tech literate, so I can figure it out, but I'm not great at it. But I love this. Returning back to the poem, I just love this because it shows just how dynamic it is. You're not really getting paid just to manage books. You're getting paid to be there for the people that need it, to help nurture people, to aid people in ways that you never expected. And I think it's just delightful because once upon a time I had this fun little idea of doing a YouTube way back in the day when YouTube was a thing. I don't think it's a thing anymore, but I wanted to call it Magical Mundane because, you know, there's just kind of moments in life that can be fun and quirky that we don't really pay attention to. And so, you know, the way that I thought about it was like, I awoke in this morning to the sound of a great beast roaring, only to realize that's my husband snoring, ex-husband at this point. But, you know, it's just kind of one of those things where if we look at things from a perspective, not of, you know, this is boring, this is life, this is just the best we'll ever get, and look at kind of the whimsical nature of it, the way that it challenges us, perhaps perhaps we won't lose the joys of it to, you know, to the daily struggle, to the daily chipping that it does. And so I just thought this was delightful and whimsical and fun, and it definitely gave me a new appreciation for librarians. So thank you, Paige.
If you want to see it's really like in a public library, watch the movie The Public by Emilio Estevez.
Okay.
You're going to be shocked. But
oh, see, now that feels like a challenge. So
it's accurate. At least the first half of the movie, I have lived that.
Well, I will definitely check that out because now my interest is piqued. But I did hear an alien clearing its throat, I do believe.
Oh.
Yes. Welcome, Rex. Glad you could join us.
Listen to the children of the night. What sweet music they make.
He has truly been lured from the shadows, guys. Welcome, welcome. Did you by chance... Sorry, Pita?
I said, what's up?
You know, I'm just getting to hang with the amazing Pam and FaZe, and now we have Rex here, and I don't think the night can get better.
Sounds like I'm getting buttered.
I've got to give you reason to come and hang out with me. So, you know, life has been crazy and I need my peeps. And you're unfortunately one of them. So, and once I have a person, I keep them. Are you stuck? By chance, did you bring a poem for the show tonight, or are you just here to give me your beautiful voice?
Oh, I'm just here because I saw you got full board.
I mean, I need time with my peeps. It's the only way that I can start my day off right and my week off right. So I will take it. All right. So having Rex on board, I've got to now find a piece that's worthy of Rex. Hold on.
Well, don't Rex and I get to comment on Afeziana's poem?
Oh, sorry. I mean, I
don't
suppose you
here.
Can. I just had so much fun with it. Pam, would you like to start?
Off the deep end.
Oh, absolutely. I would love to comment on Afeziana's poem. I like that she brings us into her so-called mundane world, but it's really not as mundane as you think because, as she mentioned, you know, we get to learn new things about librarians. That, you know, the idea that, especially nowadays with technology, that they do so much more than just, you know, sign out books. You know, the thing that you're asked to know, and I like how this is written in such an entertaining and heartfelt way, and it gives us a little peek into your world and the ways that you help people. And I have to say, I think being a librarian seems like at times it would be such a gift to be able to share yourself with people and to help people. You know, and just to interact with them. And like when you talk about, you know, that you get to do reading time with kids or people that you help, I feel like I always hear that joy in your voice. And I like that. And this is a wonderful poem and very well done.
Thanks, Pam. And it's true. I absolutely adore working with the kids and, you know, making those connections with the patrons. I have a lot of homeless patrons, too, who I definitely have some good connections. I know every homeless guy in town, which may seem a little bit strange, but, like, a lot of them are really cool. And, like, they need us for the internet, and it's I know several guys who live on the street who've written books of poetry and things like that. It's like it's a whole other culture of people who use services that you don't even know about.
Oh, absolutely.
That was such an awesome comment, Pam. And you're right. FaZe, it's one of the things I love about FaZe's writing is that you definitely can tell when her voice is really in it, the joy that bubbles forth from her. And so it's really, at least from my experience, getting to read FaZe's work is much like a peek into a portion of her soul. And it's just, I think it's beautiful because a lot of people don't always express that. And Rex, Did you get to hear it since I've now talked to you?
Yes.
Well,
considering
what
you said about that movie, it did bring up one thing to mind over another one. I got it bad, so bad, I'm hot the librarian. And, that goes back to that pun of all librarians aren't what they seem with their buns and their thick glasses. Take out the pencil from the bun and the glasses, and what do you get? You get a hot librarian. And this also walks that sort of kind of the back end angle, like the Library of Alexandria. It's where you go, not just to learn, you get to see those things you don't actually would never see before. The philosophers, their great works. The poets, their great works. The medicinal angles that walk in that realm too. It kind of hits on those notes of that is where you went if you wanted to delve into those realms that you would never find out in the real world. You'd find them at that great library.
Very true.
That was an awesome comment, Rex. Thank you. And you're right. The kind of magical mystery of the library is all the different things that you can find and you can explore, be it real and unreal, magical or mundane. And FaZe does such a fun job of capturing all the different things that you can do at a library. And as I've now learned today, some things that I didn't know you could do at a library. So fantastic poem, FaZe. Thank you for sharing that with us and for all of your guys' comments. Up next, since we now have Rex's voice to borrow, I'm going to have you read What a Night by Versus Goliath.
Okie dokie. What a Night by Versus Goliath. Honest to goodness fun, talking to you, flirting and opening up, letting go, inspiring dirty ideas, accepting truth. Perverted person, happy to appease, put persistent effort to see you please, because I love making you weak at the knees, even if I know that you're being a tease. Nothing harmful in quick-witted banter, airing out beauty, each other's decanter, getting drunk off vibration, dancing, enjoying the music, the city of answers. Whispers, susurruses, sweet as coyly, thinking of you in situations more oily. Massages and the bittersweet toiling, rolling in the hay, tensions uncoiling. Unfurling sails and oceans exploring, great conquistador, bouncy touring, to bring splendor to queens flowering, fertile lands for our nations empowering. You ride the waves gently at first, swaying slow, rocking at a few hertz, adjusting before starting in earnest, shifts in your body, mind concerts. Lit up your eyes, beautiful windows, for your to your pleasure shows. That smile when you just know, I'd never be able to tell you no. Can I come? You ask demure, devilish innocence, not so pure. I relish the request, say, sure. No words, just a satisfied purr. Arch back, grinding intensely, claws dig in, trying to incense me. Archaic desire for recompensing. My body agrees, muscles tensing. Arcs of lightning flood out skies, bright white light, thunderous cries, conjoined at the hip as souls fly, enlightened moment, together blind. Masks in simple harmonic motion, oscillate rate of gratified devotion. Kinetic energy released in explosions, shockwaves rack us in megatones. Cataclysmic orgasm, kingdom come, return to reality, unreal, nigh numb. Only able to hear your satisfied hum, fold onto my chest, tiredness succumb. Lightly run fingers up your side, shiver. Tighten, clamp, another wave delivered. Brush of water from your delicious river. Float back down to me, gracious giver. And point.
Victoria went into shock. I'm just kidding. She dropped. She was like, oh, my God, I'm home. Welcome back, Victoria.
Pam, that was so great. And that was a fantastic read by Rex, an amazing write by Versus Goliath. I think what I really appreciated about this is that it starts with, oh, what a night. And then, of course, the idea of, honest to goodness fun talking to you. And so to me, this, it isn't just the way that he's captured this act, but it almost comes off as like someone who's spent an afternoon getting to know someone and thinking about what could be, perhaps even that idea that in the sensuality, there is still that connection made more because they get to connect, not just physically, but mentally. And there's, to me, there's always something a bit deeper when it comes to that, if it's not just about the physical enjoyment, but it's truly about two minds and bodies connecting, there's just more to it. And so the play of her asking, you know, can I come? And, you know, him saying, you know, sure, you know, it's not so much that he's really getting the say of it. Same time, there's still that kind of play, that anticipation of what if they say no, what happens then? And then, of course, him just taking pleasure in her moment, the satisfaction of what he's given her and she's given him. It's sensual, it's erotic, and yet at the same time, it's beautiful in the sense of what making love should be, what intimacy should be. And he's told a beautiful story in it that we cannot help but feel as one of these parties. Just really, really stunningly done. I've been quite enjoying the pieces that he's been writing, and I definitely look forward to seeing some more. So, fantastic, right? And Pam, since I tried to neglect you last time, what did you think?
Well, I would say this is about the less mundane moments in life. On a technical level, this has wonderful rhyme and flow. It's got some great alliteration and wordplay. And I like how it builds in intensity, and I like how there's interaction and conversation between the couple as they're physically enjoying each other. It's not just about the sex, but about the interaction that comes with the flirtatious talking and all that. And I like the masses in simple harmonic motion, oscillated rate of gratified devotion. Wonderful, a sense of movement there. And Kingdom Come, the Return to Reality, Unreal, Nine, Numb, Only Come to Hear Your Satisfied Hum. I like that it has that intense orgasmic moment, and then that kind of coming down of reality where you're just laying there next to each other, listening to breathing, listening to those satisfied sighs. So just wonderful use of sound, motion, and imagery to create the moment, and very well done.
Beautifully said, Pam. And he does do a really great job of catching not just the images and the words, but he does have those hums in there, the sounds that really do bring these to life. So beautiful observation and fantastic comment. And Faith, what did you think?
I really enjoyed it. I feel like you could feel the energy of it build throughout the poem, and that was, you know, fitting for the what they were talking about. It rhymed nicely. It had a good flow. It was tasteful, even though it was obviously sexual. It was done in a tasteful way. The vocabulary is awesome. Like lascivious and sesuruses, and like there's a whole bunch of really interesting words that were used. It really brought everything to life. I was lost in listening to it, so I thought that was amazing.
Awesome comment, Faith. And it definitely is a piece that's easy to get lost in. I do have to say that as Rex was reading, before my phone decided to be a jerk and say, I'm done, it's too much, when hearing Rex, who is a master wordsmith, who tends to use words that I think leaves all of us frantically Googling at times. It was kind of fun to hear you stumble over a word because it was like, oh, oh my goodness, this is just not something I would expect from Rex. But he does, he did use a lot of really awesome words that just kind of make us stop and think and appreciate it. So that was a fantastic comment phase. And Rex, what did you think having read it?
Well, I wasn't expecting the stuff the roosters right there, and that did throw me. But opening up the first three lines, that kind of hits me with a chance encounter of some place where there's a lot going on, the banter that goes on in with this, and does walk that heavily sensual mode, but I'm not thinking this is sexually lit. This to me, this comes across as the a South American dance, a tango, a samba, where everything is drawn in quickly, closely. There's that heavy vibration that walks both sides of the line, massage and the bittersweet, roiling, rolling in the hay, tensions uncoiling, unfurling sails, oceans exploring, great conquistador, sassy pouring, bring splendid to queens firing, fertile answer impatient, nations empowering. There's that that thought to something larger, slow, rocking at a few hertz, a shift in your body, mind, concerts. There's that motion, a fluid motion and back and forth, which reminds me of a dance. And this is what it brings me, it brings to light. And that last one, the where it starts, off the lightning, flood out skies, there's that intensity to the conclusion of that tango or that samba or something where everything is coming into to the point where cataclysmic climax of emotion on the floor.
Oh, that was a stunning comment, Rex. Thank you. And I hope you don't mind my little tease at the stutter. You just always leave us so tongue-tied. But truly, that was such a phenomenal comment, and you did such a phenomenal read. And I can see what you say, how it can be like the tango, that idea of two people coming together, pulled tight, breaking apart, and the energy of it where it works its way in and speeds up and just, you know, re-ends in that kind of big moment, which is very much like a sensual act.
You got drunk off vibrations, enjoying the music, lascivious answers. That all walks with that tempered tone of a tango. Everything's in the moment. It's real.
Absolutely, absolutely. And you're right. Like when people get caught up in a song, in a dance, specifically like a tango, so many ballroom dances, I don't think my generation or even younger generations appreciate them for what they are. But you really can get caught up in that moment because you're kind of just focused on this person that you're dancing with. It can be very intimate, very erotic. And so you're right. I do see exactly where it could be like a tango. And so I just think that was a fantastic observation. So thank you for that, Rex. I appreciate the read and the comment. I loved it. All right. And up next, we'll move on to For Brittle Things, Old and New by T. Michelle. And Pam, could I get you to read this one for us?
Absolutely. I'll be happy to. All right. Things Old and New by T. Michelle. It goes like this. To peer into you, into truth, tear-stained paradox, many stories high, dandelions by the window shooting at the sky, sugar flakes in the streams of June, sweet calypso from blended coconut, fat in the hand of the most skilled butcher. Believe me, I tell the best lies. I'm the winnowed, inflammable blue, torn, dusty wall, colored supreme, words which wag again and again. We all revel in it. The mad songs, the cold spears of spat, metal nuts, palates plucked in radiance, the souls waning in the abbey. I see you, red-wrapped stranger, love-locks waves on your crown gracefully, as do the chafe on the ground you've kowtowed. Your thoughts are threshed grains, You gasp when they light up and burn the wind, each valid laughter taken from you. Hush now, let silence reign. You are the best of truths. A forge draws light from the pantheon, gauzed wound of the apothecary, defrosted fruits, vomit of the womb, and years have floated away, the twisted roots of lady mantles, rubber ducks drowned by the harbor, when piers and jetties collapsed. To where does the river flow? We are the crushed pathways, locked up apostles, a witness of one. A dozen bald men scorching the horizon, smoke wiped clean under layers of grafted skin, our strings already mummified, once nostalgic for the greatest of life. We see it, shimmering lantern in the distance, sinking into the green-eyed river, but we can't reach it, at least not yet. A roll of saffron has gone ahead into tactile thought. Go on, saffron, go on. Teach us how to shatter and gleam, how to chant the best proverbs and leap into yield of repressed rain. It has been too many moons. Oh, where did the year go? End poem.
Can't get myself off mute. That was a fantastic read, Pam. Thank you. And an amazing write by T. Michelle. I think what I appreciate in this is that it kind of starts off with someone who is trying to be honest with themselves. The idea of they're looking into someone and they're saying, there's something not quite right with you. And believe me, I know because I tell the best lies. It reminds me that often a liar knows a liar, and a narcissist can pin a narcissist because they know. They know the traits because they do them themselves. And so as much as this is a calling out to someone else, it can also be a reflection of themselves internally. They call themselves, and I like this one specifically if I can find it. You are the best of truths, a forged proselyte from the pantheon, gauzed wound of the apothecary, defrosted fruits, vomit of the womb. To me, that's such a striking image, because vomit of the womb to me really speaks much as often you think of birth as a miracle, and yet here there is this person that even their mother's womb rejected them, forced them out, vomited them out to be rid of it. Vile must a person be for that. And yet we understand too that their thoughts are threshed grain, meaning that they have been tossed so that the inedible portions leave and what is left is not of any worth. Because as they gasp, as at the light, at the burn of the wind, one by one, it leaves a picture of someone who is so dark and twisted and lost. And the implication that it started at birth, that something about them came out into this world that was just unfortunate, something to be disdained. To me, it's striking. And so we're kind of stuck on that second portion of the idea of locked of apostles, a witness to one, that we are these creatures that know the truth and see the truth, but because people do not want to know it and see it, we have been forced away, that we see these lanterns in the distance and we cannot reach it because the world has built up around us the inability to find the light, to find the truth. It is not in its nature to allow us to get there. Because, of course, if the truth is revealed, well, what does that do for their lives? What does it do for the means in which they're living if it is all based upon these ideas of falsehood? And so we're left kind of just wondering, sitting here in the rain, looking at these proverbs, perhaps the rain even a metaphor for tears, kind of just wondering where everything went. How did we get here? Because innately, I don't think people want to live in such a toxic, dark, vile environment. And yet, so often, we find our way there. Just a really stunning piece. And Rex, what did you think?
It is a tale of two cities. It was the best of times and the worst of times. And then that offers up the separation. That first one, really good in its thought. A fat in the hands of the most skilled butcher. Believe me, I tell the best lies. And we all revel in the mad songs, the cold spears of spat beetle nuts. Ooh, spat beetle nuts. That hits on the note of offering a cancerous tongue, so to speak. Palates plucked in radiance, the souls waning in the abbey. There's a thought there of religion dying on the dying on the vine, so to speak. The red rat stranger that kind of hits me up as the devil because of the love locks waving your crown gracefully as do the chaff on the grounds you've cow-toed. Your thoughts are fresh grains. And then you gasp when they light up and burn the wind. Each valid laugh is taken from you. Hush now. Let silence reign. And then that next stanza, a forged proselyte in the pantheon, the worst wound of the apothecary, defrosted roots, fruits, vomit of the womb. That speaks wholly of decay, rot, and that which lies dormant until it's given birth. At a second end, walks a different layer, because I like that thought with the saffron on the bottom end. That kind of hits the note of the sun shining. And then it hits on to how to chant the best proverbs and leap into yields of repressed rain. It has been too many moons. There's that sort of it's been far too long since I've actually held a touch of faith within, and the light might be the reason that I am here now, because the darkness has too long weighed, because he's sitting on those notes of the green-eyed river, and where does the river flow? Piers and jetties collapse. So there's a whole lot of the piers and jetties. I'd go with the thought of the bridge that confirms faith, and those who are supposed to believe but are caught on the other side of that river, so to speak.
Oh, that was such an awesome comment, Rex. I didn't even think about it as kind of like that idea of the tale of two cities, two different cities experiencing life, and yet separated by that river, seeing what the other city goes through. Just really, really fantastic comment. Thank you. And Faith, what did you think?
I liked it. I really liked the line, a forged proselyte from the pantheon. And originally I was thinking forged as in like steel that is forged, like in the forge, like blacksmith style, and that they were made into a proselyte. But then I also thought it could be forged as in a forgery, where they're pretending to be a proselyte. And to be honest, I looked up the word proselyte to make sure I actually did understand what it meant. And it's someone who has changed their idea or changed their religion or changed from one party to another. And I know some people see that as weakness, but I actually like when people kind of get more information and respond to that information rather than just stick to their original gut instinct, like maybe like, you know, change with new knowledge or new perspective. So I don't know. I really loved that line.
So I'm a terrible, terrible human being, and I didn't get to hear all of your comments, because right after I asked you what you thought, I hit my end call button instead of my mute button. But I'm sure it was a fantastic conversation. This is just not my night, guys. Thank God for Pam, who can keep letting me on. She's going to be so sick of me by the end of the night. And speaking of Pam, having read it, what did you think?
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, this is, I really like T. Michelle's writing. She's got very strong and beautiful and intriguing metaphors and imagery. I have to say, with about Viviana's comment, I really like that she looked up the word because I think by understanding individual words, it helps us understand the poem better. I ended up Googling the betel nut, which is used as a stimulant, like chewing, like tobacco or caffeine. But it also, in Sanskrit medical writings, claim that the betel nut possessed 13 qualities found in the region of heaven: pungent, bitter, spicy, sweet, salty, and astringent. Another thing that it mentions is that it should not be used by pregnant women because it can cause deformities or miscarriages, which I think really connects well with that part about being vomited from your mother's womb. I think by knowing more about the betel nut, the little tidbits of that information, and connecting with the vomiting from the womb, I think we really see, there's kind of this, just a sense of rejection, not just of the individual child, but of, I want to say a way of life, but a way of life that needs to grow. I feel like there's these people stepping out beyond the circle of what they've been taught, beyond the box, and saying, let's see what we can find on our own. And I also really like the use of saffron. You know, saffron being so expensive and so difficult to harvest, by having something that difficult, you know, saying, lead us, show us the way, you're not offering yourself up to take an easy path. You're offering yourself up to be willing to go through difficult times. It almost has a very a willingness to be a martyr type feel to it near the end. I think it's beautifully written and thought-provoking and very well done.
Oh, that was a fantastic comment, Pam. And it makes me even sadder that I missed phases because I didn't, I'm glad that you took the time to go and look up that nut because, or at least I assume it's a nut, because I wouldn't have thought of that in the context of being vomited from like your mother's womb because it causes those deformities and those miscarriages that bring about the rejection. And so I think that was really quite stunning because it also gives this idea too of nature and how various things in nature might be used medicinally and yet at the same time the costs that can come with them. So lauded in the cost that comes with them. So I appreciate that, truly. Thank you, Pam. That was a fantastic comment. All right, up next, we have My Angel 3, Manipulation. And Faith, have I asked you to read recently? Can I put you back on the spot if I have?
It's been a while. I'm happy to do it again.
Okay, good. I'm just afraid that I'm going to, like, hit my end call button again or something. So I'm, you know, I need help, guys.
Manipulation by My Angel 3. She is a new canvas, lacking character, an empty heart in her abandoned chest, waiting for you to color her, waiting for you to give her determination. She is like a marionette, waiting for a marionettist, hung on her threads with no motivation to move, waiting for the one who can give her direction, waiting for the one to lead her wherever they choose. She is a vacant room, echoing with sadness, the dusty corners tingling to be occupied, marking time to be filled, yours for the taking, a willing sacrifice, no vigor of her own. End poem.
to me, this is such a stunning poem for two reasons. So often I listen, I'm from the Northwest. And so I listen to this podcast called Murder in the Rain because, you know, when you're doing a tax return, nothing quite motivates you like learning about the murders from your region or murders in true crime in general. But one thing that really struck me is I was listening to one episode and I forget who the guy was. But after they had prosecuted him, and it was ridiculously stupid. I mean, the guy didn't even fight. He basically, after he knew that the gig was up, he didn't try and fight it because he had murdered so many women. And it just, that was his thing. He'd see that they, like, the police would come and visit and there'd be a knot that was similar to the victims. And he'd be like, you want that? And he'd cut the knot off and give it to him. And so it's kind of like, did he want to be caught? Anyways, after they finished prosecuting him, they went after the wife because they could not believe that she, one of the things he would do is he would, after he had a shoe fetish, but anyways, after he would murder these women, he would hang them in his garage and have his way with them for days. He brought women to the home and murdered them in the home. And part of the commentary was that it just seemed so hard to believe that he would go to his wife and be like, you don't go in the garage. End of discussion. And her response was, oh, okay. And it was actually to the extent that they had noted, and these were in the documents, but that if the wife wanted to cook dinner and she needed meat from the freezer in the garage, she would have to wait for him to come home. And she did. And so this really kind of reminds me of that, because we don't think of people as so subservient that they, you know, will give in to anything and everything, that they will sit there and just allow people to have their way with them and just do what they're told and not have any will of their own. And yet, in so many ways, she has captured this. The poignancy of someone who has no will of their own. They are merely waiting to be told. And it makes me wonder what made them this way. In the instance of the case, it's because the father of this woman was so strict that she was always taught that that's what you do. You follow the man of the house. And that's what she did, blindly so. And it almost got her arrested twice. Because they just could not believe that she would be so willing. And so poems like this hit on people who are out there. And you have to wonder why they got this way, because we don't live in a world that says, do as you're told. We live in a world that often tells us to question things and explore things and find things. And yet there are still people that come out due to culture, family, belief, what have you, that are so easily manipulated into somebody else's creation that they perhaps will never be their own. And to me, that is just a really striking thought. So, and Pam, what were your thoughts on this?
Well, first of all, that was a wonderful comment, Victoria. I'm glad you touched upon unfortunate story, horrifying story about that woman. And you're right, there are people out there, and it's so easy to for people to judge. Like, you know, I'm thinking in my head, I'd be one of those that'd be so curious. I'd be out to the garage as soon as I knew that his car was far enough away. But at the same time, you know, we can't judge someone because you just don't know what they've been through or how they've been manipulated. I mean, there is, you know, the gaslighting, the emotional abuse, the psychological abuse, and you know, so it's. But yeah, it very much has that feel of someone who has lost themselves, has lost their personality, and relies on other people to tell them who they are and what they feel. And I have to say that I think so far tonight this has been the saddest poem. And when I say the saddest, it's actually a compliment because it just is overwhelming to think about somebody losing themselves. It's beautifully written and very well done.
Oh, absolutely. They really captured that sense of emptiness. And I think, you know, it's really easy to say, you know, I'm empty, I'm numb. And yet they so poignantly showed all the various ways that you're right. It is definitely the saddest. It is hopeless and empty and sad. And at the same time, it does make you wonder. So thank you for sharing that, Pam. That was a fantastic comment. And Rex, what did you think?
Well, I see the cultish angle in this and the molding of an acolyte, so to speak, but I'm going to go literal. This is about the literality of the canvas itself and the need to be filled, to have something imbued in it so that it can represent itself. It opens up. She is a new canvas, lacking character, empty heart and abandoned chest. That's the literalness of from the center out, blank space. She's a marionette waiting for a marionettist, hung on her threads with no motivation to move, hung on her threads. That hits on the thought of the literality of the canvas being stretched over the wood, the threads of the canvas, and waiting for one who can give her direction, waiting for one to lead her wherever they choose. The artiste, the one with the charcoal pencils, the paintbrush, vacant room, echoing canvas. An empty canvas is an empty, sad canvas. There's nothing there, no function to it, no literality except in the weight of being filled with something that shows her worth once finished.
Oh, that was an awesome, awesome comment. And so I have to admit, I got a little distracted while you were talking because as you were speaking about the literal sense, the canvas's purpose is to be filled. And without an artist, that's what it is. I have canvas in my room and I suck at painting. I have a little craft room and I suck at painting, but I have all these hopes and dreams that one day I'm going to teach myself, except I have no time to ever teach myself. So they just sit there and they're completely useless in my room in their little plastic containers. Because I don't have the skill and I don't have the time. And that kind of distracted me because it sparked the Beauty and the Beast Be Our Guest song where it says, you know, life is so unnerving for a servant who's not serving. He's not whole without a soul to wait upon, you know. And so 10 years we've been rusting, meaning so much more than dusting. I like what you say because there is that literal sense of, you know, the room that is just, it's purposeless without someone being around to fill it with life. A canvas is just blank, waiting to be filled. And so I really appreciate that because even in the literal sense, there's still a beautiful amount of meaning in it. And so I think that was a fantastic comment. So thank you. And Faze, having read it, what do you think?
Well, I think I'm with Pam on this one where it just struck me as terribly sad. I mean, wonderfully written, but it just, it really hit me as horrible that anyone would feel so that they have no identity of their own and just need entirely to depend on someone else to give them that. But it also kind of makes me think of tabula rasa, which I think was Descartes' theory, although I'm rusty on my philosophy, where it was like everyone starts off as a blank slate and then are influenced by their environment and the people who are with them, and that fills them in. And so it's not it's not nature. It's just nurture. I can't remember. I think it was Descartes. And this kind of plays on that a little bit, except that it's a specific person, which leans more towards it being she's just blank. And I don't know. I can't stand the thought of anyone being that blank, or being treated like you are, and people to be perceived as that by someone, probably like a narcissist, who thinks that you're just this blank canvas for them to paint. And it's like, no, actually, I'm not. I don't know. I feel like I, like, get my back up with this poem, and it's nothing against the poet, but I'm like, no. I don't know. Yeah, end comment.
No, that was a perfect comment. I'm sitting over here on mute, and I just, you know, actual mute, not hanging up on myself mute. And I was just giggling with that. So that was just stunning. And not to gang up on Rex. Rex, your comment was fantastic as well, and I think it held a lot of value. Because while we often personify things to reflect perhaps our fears and the desperation, at the same time, there is that beautiful idea, like you mentioned, Faye, of the tabula rasa, that perhaps we are all just this blank slate waiting to be filled. And then, you know, perhaps it's this canvas. It's just a canvas that sits and rests and waits for an artist to come along and make worth. So both fantastic comments. So thank you, you both. All right, up next, we are going to read
Victoria.
Oh. Yes.
I would like to welcome Dexter to the show. Welcome, Dexter. Glad you could join
Dexter!
Us.
Dex.
Hey, I couldn't
sleep. The Duke of St. Paul has made an appearance?
Yeah.
That's because we're
talking about serial killers, so I opt in.
Well, Dex, for you, I will talk about serial killers whenever you want, if it will get you to come hang out with me. So.
Yep, well, I brought one. So.
Oh.
Well,
a serial killer.
If that's the case.
You brought a serial killer?
I didn't know that Dex was hanging out with serial killers, guys. We might need to have him talk to somebody, but that's okay. Nobody give him your location, though.
Yeah, it makes the night interesting.
Well, absolutely.
Right.
Well, with that in mind, would you mind reading your piece for us since you've came on?
No problem. This is called Morbid Fantasies. Wash your fucking hands. She screamed at her blank face, son. Who knows what kind of shit you've been up to, and why do you smell like gas? He didn't say a word as she poured another stiff drink, a vodka and coke like it was going out of style. Standing at the sink scrubbing his hands, staring intensely at the soap suds between his fingers as his hands moved, subconsciously on their own, his mind back in the woods. Ew, screamed the neighbor girl. He would walk home with her and her twin brother after school every day. What are you doing? The girl's brother asked. He stood there holding a squirrel that he had caught in his trap by the back of his neck as it struggled, his grip too strong for it to get free. He pulled from his coat pocket a can of lighter fluid, and he began to spray the squirrel. What the fuck, dude? No, you can't be serious, said the neighbor boy in disbelief, yet too intimidated to stop him. He remembers what he did to a classmate on the playground last year. He throws the can of lighter fluid and pulls a lighter from his pocket. No, screamed the little girl as she turned away. The squirrel bursts into flames as he drops it. It screeched and struggles and runs, and crackling of its hair and flesh melting, it finally stops as the smell grows. He never blinked, and he just watched it suffer. The neighbor boy grabs his crying sister and takes off running down the country road, leaving him as he took out a rag, staring at his hands while he wiped them off. Suddenly, he is hit sharply in his right ear. His face crinkles up and his ear begins ringing. He turns and he is back in his kitchen, staggering. His father is behind him. Where the fuck is my lighter fluid, boy? His neck slaps across his face, drops him to the floor. He still doesn't say a word to his as his father grabs his coat and digs in his pocket, finding the container. You touching my stuff again, I'm going to kill you. You understand me? Not saying a word, he just stares. You understand me? Followed by a kick to his chest. Dumb fucker, as his dad walks to the garage, his mother's hand shaking, holding her glass and looking at the wall. He gets up to go to the bathroom to clean the blood dripping down his nose. His hand in his pocket, rubbing himself out of anger after wiping his face. He released into the toilet, breathing heavily, cleaned off his hand, looking at the soap suds between his fingers and wanting nothing more than to relive lighting that squirrel on fire forever. End poem.
Oh, Dex, this is deliciously dark. It's pretty, I mean, it's a common theme among serial killers where, you know, the parent, the mother is just terrible, just a terrible human being. Ed Gein's, his mother, I think he ended up murdering a ton of women that looked like his mother. Jeffrey Dahmer's mother, just completely.
Ed Kemper.
Yeah, Ed Kemper, thank you. Yes. And Jeffrey Dahmer's mother, too, originally just abandoned him. But we have these serial killers who we often think that we go, you know, what's wrong with them? How does a person become like that? And yet when we stop and look at their life, and of course there's always that one where it's like they had the perfect life and just for some reason they're incredibly fucked up. But, you know, we see these serial killers and murderers that it seems like you look at their life and you understand how much of a victim they are. And so they start, because they're so helpless against both their parents, the two people who are supposed to take care of them, they start off with the idea of torturing, you know, an animal, catching a squirrel and snapping its neck, lighting it on fire. All the while, everyone else around them, the little girl is screaming no, because it's just inhumane, the thought of doing that just for the sake of doing it, and the rage that is sparked at the helplessness as they go home, saying, in this moment, I had power. Of course, someone would wander down that avenue. Of course, someone would want to feel powerful in taking a life because theirs has been made so helpless and worthless and miserable. And this is the only moment where they get to make someone else feel the pain that they've been subjected to. It's stunning. I feel like there's actual several murderers that this could be tied to. And it's just stunning, stunning, right? That really puts us into the mind of a murderer. So fantastic piece, Dex. Thank you for sharing
that. Thank you.
I now have to do like in a show entirely devoted to murderers. Just, you know, we'll have a true crime one.
Yeah,
you know, Hearts of LNP, let's talk about people who kill people. Like, that seems...
Yeah, I think that's more of a legitimate.
No, I got
oh,
a couple of
fine,
those.
Fine, Pam. Maybe a Halloween special. I'll find a way to do this.
Well, something like that. Yeah, that would work.
No, but this is just stunning. And FaZe, what did you think?
I mean, it was terrifying, but great storytelling. Definitely seems like a serial killer in the making. Killing animals is never a good sign. But we can see with the treatment from the father and the mother letting that happen and being so focused on her drinking, that is often the case when people are screwed up later. It's because of that difficult childhood where they weren't getting the support and faced violence and wanted to feel in control. So you gave a backstory that explained the behavior, and you're really vivid in your description of what's happening and framing it by having the neighbors there to be the other perspective, the horrified one, I think was a really smart choice. This is great storytelling.
Thank you.
That was a fantastic comment, Faze. And Dex, you really do have a skill of weaving these tales together that drag us into it and immerse us in the thought, in the feelings, in ways that you don't always get in a poetry short, if you will. So beautiful comment, Faze. Very well deserving, Rex. And Pam, what did you think?
First of all, I'd like to welcome Felon to the show. Welcome, Felon. Glad you could join us.
Hello.
Hi, Felon. I'm
here.
Oh, I'm so excited. I get all the best people. I've got Dex here, and I've missed Dex, and I've got Rex, and I've got Faze and Pam and Helen, and I just get all the best people.
It's Felon, a good night for callers.
Yes, it is. And so I'm gonna have Pam comment real quick, and then Felon, if you've had a chance to read this, I'd love to hear your thoughts right after Pam.
Okay. All right.
Well, wonderful storytelling, Dexter. I like how you delve into the psychological aspects of a serial killer, and I like the use of the interaction of sound, you know, and conversation to bring the scene and the mind of the killer to life in front of us. So excellent write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam.
Beautifully said, Pam. Thank you. And Felon, what did you think if you had a chance to read it or hear it?
I'm reading over it now. Just from the beginning stanza, I can already tell, well, one, Dex is good at this kind of write anyway. Wash your fucking hands. She screamed at her blank-faced son, who knows what kind of shit you've been up to, and why do you smell like that, or smell like gas? I already can tell where this is heading. I mean, this is Bates Hotel kind of crap right here. Get in the shower. I'm pretty sure this is going to be. I'm going to read it again, Dex. I'm going to read it all the way through, so I apologize if I didn't get a chance to read it.
Yeah, not a problem.
Came on.
You're definitely on the right track for the way that that this poem is written, and definitely worth the read. So thank you for sharing your thoughts, even though I kind of made you do that early. I appreciate you. And Rex, what did you think?
Well, the title itself bites at what's going on, morbid fantasies. And he opens up with his mother being the meme, blank area. But hers comes from the drinking. His father's just a mean old bastard. And that's kind of where some of these stories end up going. The likes of, you mentioned Ed Gein before, there's Picton, the pig farmer from Canada, and Dahmer, and a whole slew of others. Kemper, he was a smart ass and highly intelligent. He walks a different realm, like Bundy. They had different agendas. This kind of walks on the thought of that triad of criminality that one associates with a serial killers. The the burning of setting fires, killing animals, and some kind of sexual fantasy that rolls into it, or at least the sexual attitude that comes with a combination of those two things. And that really is one of the nastier ones, because they don't have a clear agenda. They just kind of walk and find their victims along the way. The really good serial killers know their victims, and they pick them carefully. That's why they get to stay around for so damn long. These guys kind of burn out really quickly. And, well, they're still quite the nasty thing to come across. But this one is definitely a bud in the making.
Thank you, Rex.
That was an awesome comment, Rex, truly. I appreciate that you recognized and noted, you know, we often decide that serial killers are all bad people and we lump them all together. And yet oftentimes when you start to look at their motivation and some of what they do, they definitely are not all of the same cloth, you know, different things motivate them, and what might
what might other people respond differently to for some reason triggers this psychosis in these people. And so sometimes they're able to do it a little more intellectually, a little bit more predatory, you know, not to know that, but, you know, more like a natural born person. And then of course, there's people that are made. And as you said, Rex, this really is like one of those budding in the making. So fantastic comments. All right, we've got about 15 more minutes. So, Felon, first and foremost, do you happen to have a poem that we could share, or are you just here to hang out with me?
I just wrote you one.
Okay, awesome. Is it The Killing Sea? Is it that one?
Yeah.
We're going to end the night on murder, guys.
You want murder?
Damn, don't get mad at me.
I just went with what I heard y'all talking about, so I wrote it to what y'all were talking about.
I love it. I love it. This show was supposed to be a little eclectic, and it has definitely been eclectic, and it makes my heart so happy. So, whenever you are ready,
okay,
take it away.
Shadows part as waters settle. Still hear the turn of the bike pedal. Trees strike bare one moment here, the next someone's come prepared. Salty skies drain the fears inside. Death rolls white capped to sins. High tide. End poem.
Oh, this gives me goosebumps. It's not so much like what Dexter's is, which is the murderer in the making. It's not about the way that these people can hunt down those to manipulate, either because they're just that charming or because they've just found someone that lost. But instead, this to me reads more like someone who, like a victim, really, a child or a person who's just going about their everyday business. And for whatever reason, someone who's come prepared has decided that this is the one. And that's the unfortunate nature of it is that, you know, I guess what's most terrifying about knowing that there's serial killers and murderers out there is that so often we want to say, well, they have a set victim. And if I don't fall in line with that set victim, then I'm safe. But sometimes it's just the opportunity. It's just the person that happens to come along, or it's just the right time at the right moment. And, you know, if you can call it the right time at the right moment.
Crazy enough, they won't want you. Be too much of a headache.
That is very fair. There's actually been times where they've been, you know, attempts have been thwarted because someone acted crazy enough or fought too hard. But this is just a sunny right that really captures kind of the unfortunate nature that sometimes it's people are a victim just because, not because they did anything wrong, but just because. So really stunning right now for such a, it's one of those 5-minute masterpieces. I swear, I need to get on your guys' level. And Rex, what did you think?
Actually, it's really striking in its thought. You look at that shadows part as waters settle. There's that notation of calm in the moment, and mm-hmm. everything opens wide in this person, and still can hear the turn of that bike pedal. There's that thought to the pleasure in the mind. In reliving tree strike bare, one moment here, the next someone came prepared. Again, gone in less than 60 seconds, so to speak. And the death rolls white cap, the sins high tide. There's that notion of the thrill in the moment. The sins high tide could be just to the death, or could be to the physicality in drawing on that death itself.
The crashing the shore of death, right, exactly.
Well, Rex, you just gave me goosebumps all over again. Congratulations. Fantastic comment. And Pam, what did you think?
Well, first of all, as always, I'm just very impressed. Strong use of imagery. And this, you know, you always wonder about those people, the children who disappear and are never seen again. And
right.
It's like with all the technology we have nowadays, how do people just disappear? And, you know, so that bike, turn of the bike pedal, tree strikes bare. It's that whole idea of like, the one second your child is there, your child is safe, and the next they're gone, and life becomes this kind of unknown path of fear and sadness. It's just a haunting rite, beautifully written and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. Thank you.
Beautifully said, Pam. And Dexter, the Duke of St. Paul, what were your thoughts?
I thought that this was written kind of about somebody that killed a serial killer. Shadows part water settle. You still can hear the turn of the bike pedal. One moment here, you know, the saying is one moment here, next you're gone. One moment here, the next someone came prepared, like they were going to prey on somebody that was packing a pistol. You know, one moment here, the next one, somebody came prepared. Salty skies drain fear inside. Death rolls white cap to sin's high tide. It's almost like the death rolled onto the person that was committing the sins. Is what the way I kind of took it. I thought it was somebody preying on somebody, and they preyed on the wrong person.
Oh wow, so I like that.
I could
thing.
Be wrong.
Thank
though.
You.
That was fantastic. I mean, the boys tonight are really bringing it because I have goosebumps again. And this is why we have to make sure that we let Dex know that he is, in fact, the Duke of St. Paul, because that was a fantastic comment. Thank you. And I have to say, you kind of reminded me in your comment, Dex, of Unbreakable, the M. Night Shyamalan movie from way long ago, where the superhero basically is there seeing the shadows of the future so that he might be able to prevent things and come prepared.
I've been in.
So.
Yeah.
Oh, all right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll have to check that one out again. The one with Bruce Willis. I haven't seen that in a long time.
Yes. Well, and the reason it reminded me of it, too, is because his weakness was water. So, you know, with the water and that whole thing, it just kind of reminded me of that. Don't question my brain. It's late at night and I'm psychotic.
Yeah.
Faith, what did you think?
I liked the way that nature was used to express things that were clearly about humans. And you don't even have to say directly that it's about human death, but it comes that way. As the waters settle and the trees and the tide, it's beautiful nature, but it has that emotion and kind of undercurrent of you can tell what it's actually about. I like how subtle it is in its delivery.
Thank you.
Fantastic comment, Faith. Thank you. Well, we've got about, Rex is chuckling. This always worries me. Could just be the ambient. We've got about 7 minutes, so I'm not going to try and have us rush through any more poems. So thank you to all the poets that wrote in. It's truly you guys that make these shows. And then, of course, all my wonderful callers. Thank you, Faith, Fallon, Rex, and Dex, the Duke of St. Paul. Keeping me company and offering your guys' wonderful insights. I do want to take a moment to ask Faith, what do you have going on this week?
I have the quote, the idea behind a kaleidoscope is that it's structure that's filled with broken bits and pieces, and somehow if you can look through them, you still see something beautiful. I feel we are all that way, so it's kind of about how our broken pieces can end up being something beautiful anyway, and that's by Sarah Braze, the singer. So that's for part sinner, part saint, and then Dexter is actually doing the contest for Double Helix, so Dex, will you tell us about that one?
Yeah, this one's about, this one's money, money, money. This one's about money. What does money represent to you? What are your view of it? What is money? Or you could do what you think should be done with money or whatever. But so that's just what we got going on this week for Double Helix. We're doing the money show.
I mean, who doesn't like money though, right?
Well, then there you go. You can hate it or love it. So
Exactly. And that's, you know, and one thing that I've learned in the therapy that I've taken is that, you know, there's no such thing really as a good or a bad, theoretically, as we just talked about murderers, as a good or a bad thing. You know, innate and inanimate objects, typically, you know, a knife is a knife. It's only bad when it's used to cut people and not steaks. And so that's definitely check out both those contests. Those shows are Part Sinner, Part Saint, and then Double Helix. Double Helix airs Thursday after the after midnight Thursday a.m., correct?
And then I think, it's the early show.
Oh, the early show on Thursday.
Yeah, 10 p.m.
Okay, so Thursday, Double Helix, which is fantastic with Faze and Dexter. And then, of course, Saturday morning after midnight with Babbler and Faze is the Part Sinner, Part Saint. And Rex, what have you got going on?
Well, we've got Star Wars tomorrow, if I remember correctly, finishing out. Right, Pam?
We have actually a show that's a mixture, because what I'm calling it is Star Wars, Wild, and Wombats, because we have carryovers from Star Wars, carryovers from Oscar Wilde,
yeah.
And I found this quote that is just, I thought was so darkly humorous, from this fantasy writer, and it's like, when you are dying, a wombat is better than no company at all.
Oh my God, I love that.
Nice.
That is amazing.
And next Sunday.
What is this? Oh, go ahead, Rex.
Next Sunday, we're going to have fun, because we're beaching with the boys, doing some beach boys the next Rhythm and Rhyme.
Oh, my goodness. I've missed that you're doing the Beach Boys. I'll have to be honest. I'm terrible at following Rhythm and Rhyme just because life is chaotic. But I'm definitely going to have to check that one out because I loved the Beach Boys growing up. So
got the great one.
Exciting.
You got fun. Sloop John B. Little Deuce Coop. GTO,
oh my God.
Good Vibrations, California Girl, Surfing Safari, Surfing USA. It's a whole bunch of songs to play with.
Oh, man. I don't know. You might get me lost in my childhood, but I'm definitely excited about that. That just sounds fantastic. And Pam, why don't you tell us about the poem, that the contest for Wednesday and any other ones you've got going on, other than, of course, Star Wars Wombat.
Right. I have three contests running right now that all have space. For the Art of Seduction, I have Tilda Doolittle poem prompts. For Strange Magic After Midnight, I have a Hypatia quote, which I highly recommend. I highly recommend them all. And then for Break On Through on Friday, I have Wassily Kandinsky's Several Circles, you can write to a quote of his, which I provided, or any of his artwork. And the quote is, "The circle is the synthesis of the greatest oppositions. It combines the concentric and the eccentric in a single form and an equilibrium. Of the three primary forms, it points most clearly to the fourth dimension." So that's the kind of stuff I got going on right now.
Oh, that is awesome. I'm going to have to check. I have to say, Pam, you're telling us about that third one. I was like, my brain is definitely not wrapping around this right now. Maybe it will after my first cup of coffee in the morning. So definitely check those out. We do have another Strange Magic After Midnight contest up. It is all about the lore of the London Ravens. So be sure to check that out just because it's super fun. It's got several lords that are behind it. And, of course, one of those ravens actually just died. So perhaps the lore will come to fruition. And then we do have next Sunday, the Black Lace Diary contest is up for Bite Marks. So go and check that out if you live that lifestyle and share as the images direct you. We are out of time, so I do want to thank everyone that called in. Dex, Faze, Felon, Rex, and Pam for being the ever amazing Pam, for you guys all sharing your shows, your thoughts, your voices, your comments. And then, of course, thank you to all the poets that allowed us to share their work this week. You guys are truly what makes these shows wonderful and continues to show why L&P is just an amazing group to be a part of on the ever wonderful All Poetry site. So everyone have a great week, and until next time, bye.
Night, gang.